This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Invest Talk, October 23rd, 2014. And, of course, we're heard on the radio, 4 to 5 Pacific Time. We're live, 4 to 5 Pacific Time. We're also live streaming on InvestTalk.com. And we welcome all of our podcast subscribers who signed up for free at iTunes and other distribution services. And we're here to talk about money. And we can be sure we're talking about matters that are important to you because you call in and ask the questions. 888-99-CHART. You bring me your concerns. And if you don't, that's okay. I have concerns of myself and I will bring them up myself. I have a number of things on my desk sitting here that I want to talk about. But I'd love to hear your investing stories. Many of our listeners have been investing in the market for many years and we'd like to hear their experiences. Give us some wisdom of your years of experience. I think that would be smart, and I think it would be very beneficial to everybody to hear. So if you have one or you want to talk about something you've discovered over the years in investing, share it with us. Now, you can also reach us via email to our 24-hour listen line, or you can reach us in many different ways. You can call at 888-99-CHART, number live now, anytime you want. And the focus of the show is education. And we work to make this hour worth your while, your investment while. Like many things in life, investing is an endeavor that requires, to increase your knowledge, to have a rounded understanding of how investing works. People think that, well, we'll just go buy some stocks and they'll go up. No, it's not nearly that simple. I wish it was. There's no formula. There's no trick. There's no secret. There's no, there's no software you can buy and you buy low and sell high and it works. That none of that works. None of it. There's no, many people learn about technical analysis, about reading a chart. Reading a chart is not a science. It's an art. And it tends to be true. It's not always true. Some people buy stocks based on valuations. What's a valuation? How much is a company worth based on its earnings, its profit margins, its debt, all those things. There's many things that come into the valuation of a stock and say, okay, I'll just study the fundamentals of that company, study it, and therefore I will know what stocks to buy. That doesn't always work either. Nothing always works. There's no one technique, one strategy. There isn't. Sometimes a strategy works for a while, and then it stops working. Trust me, it's frustrating. I've been doing this many, 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 many years. You have to understand a lot of different things, economy, politics. You got to understand that background, the economic cycle, the stock market cycles, the tendency of valuations based on different sectors. On and on and on, besides the fundamentals and the technicals. Anyway, so don't focus on just one technique and think you've hit the mother load. You know how many people have done that and it doesn't work. That's not how it works. You can't deal with the market in a vacuum. You got to understand all the relationships, historical relationships, cycles, historical methods, the probabilities involved in stocks making new highs, new lows. What's all that? The emotion driving stock prices up and down. The fear, the greed, the two main emotions that control the market. You got to understand all that. I wish it was easy. It's just not. Anyways, enough of me rambling. Why don't we talk to somebody? You can call us live, 4 to 5 right now, Pacific Time on InvestTalk.com. Or in between programs, you can leave a question. Here's one question that was left on our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I have a question about a 401k plan, and this is for my daughter who recently graduated from college, and she had a job. She has a job. Well, she had a job, and she was investing money in the 401k plan, and now she's moved on to another job. So the question is, what happens with the, they didn't give her instructions on the Vanguard account that the 401k is in, and I'm just wondering if she can keep that in there, or if it, if she has the opportunity to roll it over to an IRA or something, or what the recommendation would be. There's only about, she wasn't there very long, was it? It's only about $1,000, but I'm just wondering if they're just going to send her monthly statements and it just stays in there if she doesn't do anything else with it. What are the rules? Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay. Old 401k plans. You worked for a company and you moved to another company and you have an old 401k plan left there. Many companies will let you leave it there. You can leave it there. Many companies will make you take it out. Depends on their rules. But what you should do, and this is my opinion, and what you can do are two different things. You can leave it there. You can roll it over into your new 401k plan. You can do those two things. But what you should do, in my opinion, is roll it over into an IRA. Now, why do I say that? So what you do is you go down, I don't care who you go to, Fidelity, Schwab, whatever, open up an IRA and tell them you want to roll over your old 401k plan into this new IRA. Okay? You do not want to take the money. You do not want to spend it. You do not want to roll it into a regular account because, remember, that's taxed. That money has not been taxed. So as soon as you take it, it's added to your adjusted gross income, and you have to start paying income tax on it. Okay? So you don't want to do that. You roll it over into a what's called a rollover IRA. Once it's there, you can buy anything you want, mutual funds, stocks. I would suggest an index ETF at $1,000, a young person. Just tell her to keep investing in, you know, an index, S&P 500. You know, NASDAQ 1000, you know, NASDAQ 100 or the Dow, I don't care, Russell 2000, and just leave it there forever and you'll eventually make money, you'll make good money. But that's what you probably should do is roll it over to an IRA. So how you do that is you go to wherever you want to open up the IRA, Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard, wherever, and say, I want to open up a rollover IRA. And they'll say, okay, where's the old 401k rolling over from? Where's it coming? And you just give them an old statement, say, here it is. And they will. There's what's called an ACAT transfer form, and it'll just roll over. You may have to go to cash if you bought mutual funds in there, but that's okay. It's pretty simple. They will help you, whoever's opening up the account for you. They'll help you. But that's what you should do. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. When searching for bargains, should you ignore the unloved little guys? Big problems for small stocks. That's one of our talking points today. I also want to discuss a couple other things. I want to talk about some of the economic numbers coming out of Europe this week. And they're not as dire as they have been. That's kind of interesting. I also, at the same time, I want to talk about some of the numbers coming out of the U.S., what, this week. I also want to talk about Social Security benefits. When should you take them? There was an article a week or so ago in the, I think it was the Motley Fool, that the title was Why Smart People Take Social Security Benefits Early. And I don't think that's a very good idea for 90% of everybody out there. So I want to discuss that. So we're going to do that today. Okay? What do you want to talk about? What's on your mind? Well, the market was down, was up 216 points today for the Dow. The S&P, the NASDAQ was up 69 and the S&P up 24. Now, that doesn't reflect what really happened today. The market was up much bigger than that. There's almost 300 points on the Dow. And then it gave a lot of that back the last hour or two of the day. Not a lot, but it gave back a third of it. So the market is still very volatile, very, very volatile. Remember we had a down day of 150, 160 points yesterday, up day 216. And in a recent week or two, we're looking at a market that's been rebounding from a month or so of falling. And it has regained about half of its fall. When you're looking at the S&P, the Dow, and the NASDAQ, about half. So this is the point where, if you've heard me talk on this, on these subjects before, stocks going up or down, and I, you know, if they go up really sharply, they give back about half of that before they continue up. That's not unusual. And if when something goes down really sharply, they give back about half of that, then they may continue down. So it's kind of a critical point where we are now in the market. Where is it going? Kind of, it's kind of critical right in this area. And I think Justin mentioned that, by the way, when I was in San Jose yesterday. I think he mentioned it on the air. Was it yesterday or Monday? I don't remember. That, you know, we also have a number that we're looking at the S&P 500, and it's at 1961. 1961. If it breaks above that, and are we going to be on a new bull market phase? And just so you know, it just recently recovered the 200-day moving average above it. It fell below it for the S&P. It fell below it on all the indexes, and most of them recovered, but not the small cap stocks, which we're going to talk about today. It's one of the main talking points. Okay? There's a new way to get in on a conversation, by the way, on this show. Send a message to us via Twitter now. You can do it right now at InvestTalk. That's InvestTalk with two T's. You can get your questions to us the old-fashioned way, too. Call in the number, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
With InvestTalk 101 and InvestTalk Personal, we provide useful information for everyone, no experience necessary. And the line is open right now to everybody. 888-99-CHART is how to get through to Steve right now.
So big problems for the small cap stocks. And that's, you know, you can look at the small cap stocks by looking at an index called the Russell 2000. Okay, the Russell 2000 is made up of small cap stocks. And if you look at it, it's weak. It's down for the year. It's been a weak part of the market for the year. I mean, the market is not healthy as you think, because when you look at the small cap stocks, they've been pretty bad. But the question is, should you abandon them? Should you not invest in them? And the answer is that would be wrong. Now, small caps lead the market down and lead the market up. They usually are the more volatile part of the market. But why am I saying that maybe you should be considering them? Well, they've had a bad year. You know, in a bad year, maybe it's their turn to move. What's been working the last few years is usually the big caps with the high dividends, because everybody's searching for yields that they can't get through, you know, bonds, treasuries, municipal bonds, U.S. government bonds, because they're so low. So they've been buying high dividend paying type stocks, driving those prices up. And small caps don't pay dividends. So the desire has not been as strong in that part of the market. But over time, from 1927 to 2009, the small cap value index is up 14% a year. What is the large cap value stocks? 11% a year. So, you know, if you talk about growth or value, the value part of the market is much better in the small stocks than in the large stocks over time. Problem is what time? Over how long of a period of time? But it doesn't mean you should run away from small caps, but just be careful. We're still in turbulent times. Are you looking for a financial advisor? Do you know the difference between them and a registered investment advisor? Financial advisor and a registered investment advisor? And what are good questions to ask both? I'm here for you. Give me a call. 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, attention older investors, there's a good chance you're doing it wrong. The five biggest mistakes older investors make. That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. And we hope you'll listen. If you have a question for Steve or Justin, you can ask it anytime at 888-99-CHART, and they'll answer it on the next podcast. This is the Thursday, October 23rd edition of Invest Talk with portfolio manager Steve Peasley. Attention, older investors. There's a good chance you're doing it wrong. The five biggest mistakes older investors make. That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. Please join us then. But there's still plenty of time today. 888-99-CHART. Get in touch with Steve right now.
888-992-4278. You drive the discussion. It's up to you. We want to help you fill in the blanks of whatever blanks you might have. You can reach us anytime you want and ask a question. 888-992-4278. And this is how you do it.
Hi, this is Kevin. Just wondering the difference between all of the different roles that are in play when you have somebody manage your money. That includes the advisor, it could be an investment manager, the sponsor, or a custodian. Just wanted to get clarification on those terms. Thank you very much. Love listening to your show.
And that's a very good question. Okay, because there's a lot of players involved. You know, no matter how you do it, it's just going to be a lot of players. The most important player I think you need to think about when you open up an account is the custodian, the person, the company that actually is holding your money. And this is where Bernie Madoff got, you know, all these clients got ripped off. His company, Bernie Madoff's company, was the custodian. You don't want a registered investment advisor, a financial planner, or anybody being a custodian. You want large company custodians like J.P. Morgan Chase, Fidelity, Schwab, big custodians, well known, but they don't even have to be well known. But what they do have to have is SIPC insurance, SIPC. So that's the company that's holding your money. Okay, so your money is safe there; no one can steal it, except for the custodian that has control over it. But then you have government insurance, SIPC insurance, so it gets replaced if someone tries to steal it. Now, the next part, so that's that. Now you have other players that manage that money sitting at the custodians for you. I'm a registered investment advisor. What that means is I will make decisions buying and selling your stocks. Now, that's how I do it. There are other registered investment advisors that sit down with you, and you both make decisions to buy and sell whatever stocks or bonds, whatever equities you want. That's a registered investment advisor. He gets a fee to manage or advise you how to do it. Then there's a broker-dealer. A broker-dealer is a person, is a company that's kind of in between you and the custodian. Now, sometimes the custodian is the broker or has a brokerage firm that it uses. And, you know, that's the in-between person that charges you that trading fee. Then you can have a broker. Broker is a guy who just calls you up, tells you to buy this, and then he gets a commission for it. Doesn't really manage your portfolio. That's not what he does. He's not a portfolio manager. Then there is certified financial planners. Those guys can recommend investments and help you buy and sell whatever they want, but they usually get paid by commission. The person you hire to manage your money, what you want to key on there is how does he get paid? How? Now, you got to be very careful because, so, you know, you got if someone's selling annuities or mutual funds, is there commissions involved? In a mutual fund case, it's called loads. Is there a load involved? Usually 5% A share, what's called an A share mutual fund. It's a 5% commission they get right off the top. A registered investor advisor such as myself usually gets a small piece of the portfolio to manage the entire portfolio for you. There's many moving parts, and if you have questions about that, you can ask me, send me an email at investtalk.com or kppfinancial.com. Go to our website, click on Contact Steve, send me an email. I'll explain them all. And I'll be happy to explain how I get paid. I get a small piece every quarter of the portfolio as I manage it for you. And what I like is that I buy and sell the same things for myself as I do for other clients, so that, you know, I'm putting myself on the same line, same percentages, same price, everything, exactly as my clients. I kind of like that philosophy, and that's pretty unusual, by the way. Not too many. Registered investment advisors or certified financial planner or brokers do that. They sell you stuff, but they don't buy it themselves. I never understood that. It just didn't seem quite right to me. Doesn't seem quite right. Now, we've had some economic news out this week here in the United States. We had some economic news out in Europe. But I definitely want to get to, before the end of the day, when do you take Social Security benefits? When should you? And the reason why I'm even talking about it is because there's been some articles written that you should take it early. And I think that's wrong for 99% of everybody out there. Now, for a certain group out there, yeah, maybe you should take it early. But not for everybody. So how do you determine what that group is? Well, we're going to discuss that. I'm going to get into it. I don't want to get into it now because I'm coming up on a hard break, and I don't want to be halfway in the middle of it and then can't talk about it. Have you noticed earnings coming out? This is the earnings season. We're right in the heart of it. Earnings are looking pretty good. Pretty good reports, earnings for the corporations on our stock exchange. And so the question is what about future earnings? What about the estimates going forward? They look pretty good too. There hasn't been a lot of disappointments. There have been disappointments. But, you know, I look at the earnings that across a wide swath of the market, not just the headline earnings misses like IBM. You know, no. Let's look at everybody as much as you can. And they've been looking pretty decent. I meet with a limited number of our listeners each month for individual retirement account reviews. I did that yesterday with a lot of people. You don't need an account at KPP. Just go to our website, investtalk.com, and click on Contact Steve.
You're listening to InvestTalk. Is there any way to protect your portfolio from more risk than you can handle? Ask Steve. Any money matter is open for discussion. 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Okay, we had the flash PMI report out today. You know what that means? Purchasing Managers Index. And flash means it's not the official report. And this is for October. See, the flash one is like it's trying to show, well, what's happened in October, and we're still in October. And they're suggesting, and it's pretty accurate, it's not too far off the mark, they're suggesting that it's going to be 56.2%. Well above the 50% break even. When it's above 50, economies are expanding. So it's still well above it. So our economy is expanding. So why am I bringing it up? Because there's parts of it that are a concern. That were new orders, new export orders, and output all decelerated. Okay, they're all going down. And forward-looking new orders had the smallest gains in 9 months. That's very sharp weakening of the strength. It's still strong. I don't want to mislead you. But there's something going on that internally that it looks like it's going to get weaker going forward. And it probably is because of the strong dollar. I think that's what we're seeing starting to show up a little bit. Remember, the dollar started to gain strength in August and got really strong in September. Okay, in October, it started to give a little bit of that back. So we're probably going to see that change. Now, our second quarter GDP came in at 4.6%, right? Well, it's going to be revised again, but let's say it's in that. That's pretty good. The third quarter looks like it's going to come in a little over 3%. And this is part of the reason. And then in the fourth quarter, probably be below 3%. So, if we show weakness in this, what will the Fed do? I still think they're going to cut QE and get out of that completely by the end of this month. I could see that happening without any problem. The issue that the stock market is contemplating is when do they start raising rates? And the market is looking at it and saying in the middle of next year. That right now. They're saying that. That may be true, maybe not true. We don't really know. Because remember, we're dealing with Janet Yellen, not Ben Bernanke. So she's kind of new. We're not sure how she reacts, what she does. You know, would she do a QE4? If you remember, if the stock market falls sharply, will the Fed jump in and try to stop it? Done it before. Did it with Bernanke there. That's the assumption that they will. But at what point? Don't know. Not sure. Let's go to Joe in San Bruno. How you doing, Joe?
Very fine, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks,
Steve, I'd like your opinion on a... Thank you. You're welcome. On the Vanguard California Long-Term Tax-Exempt Fund, symbol V like Victor, C like Cat, I, T like Tom, X like Xavier.
Okay. Now, these are California long-term municipal bonds, so they're double tax-free for people living in California.
Right.
Okay. And so Vanguard, yes, as a family, usually has some of the least expensive costs. Okay, so I do like, if you're going to buy a bond fund, you know, Vanguard's probably a good place, or even an index fund in the stock market. Vanguard's probably a good place to do, you know, good place to buy a Vanguard fund. Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about long-term, you know, California's not going away, just like the United States is not going away. And you have had a pretty nice run in this bond fund. Okay, run up. Now, when I say run, for bond funds, they don't run up like stocks. This has gone from like 11.3 at the beginning of the year to at the high a week or so ago of 12.2. Okay, and that's a big run for a bond fund. Okay. And what is that, 10%-ish? Something like that?
Yeah, he's right here. Yeah, over 10.
So then you get also the dividend yields. I'm not sure how they pay out, if they pay out quarterly or semi-annually or monthly. I don't know, because I don't have that information at my fingertips. But I do think it's a good bond for people who want double tax-free. In other words, you have too much you're paying too much taxes. But you're not going to get a really good yield on it. You're not. You know, meaning the yield of whatever it's paying you. Well, I don't see that either right off the top of my head, but it's probably what, 2-3%, maybe 3.5%. Do you know what it is, Joe?
Well, okay, a year, 1 year. Of course, part of this is the run up in the net asset value was over 10%, almost 10.5%.
That's because
three years averaged over 6%. Yeah, the net asset value increase, which you said is unusual, right?
Yeah.
But over a 10-year period, Steve, it shows about a little more than a 4.5% return.
Well,
it did well in the down.
Yeah, it would, Joe, because all that 10 years, the interest rates have fallen, right?
Right.
So do you think the next 10 years, is interest rates going to fall, stay the same, or go up?
Most likely go up.
Okay. Then you won't get those kinds of returns of the last 10 years as going forward for the next 10 years, because interest rates are going to probably rise, even though I think they'll rise very, very slow. As they rise, the bond values, the net asset value will go down. Now, this has gone up because interest rates have fallen, which is great. But now the question is okay, what's going to be my return now that if I think interest rates are going to rise? And if it's a long-term bond fund, which this one is, rising interest rates even a little bit will not be very pleasant. This thing will go down.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
Okay, I was looking at something like this for about a 4%, maybe 4.5% withdrawal. I'm old enough to be withdrawing.
Ah.
80 years old, so about to have a better withdrawal sum. And not worry too much about the at asset value.
Well, it will. My gut feeling is that interest rates are kind of at their low, somewhere around here. It's hard to believe that they'll go lower, but they could. I've been wrong about that. I don't want to be too, because if something goes wrong with our economy, the Fed is going to keep pushing rates down. Try to, but I do don't. I don't. I think you probably should consider that the last 10 years are not going to be like the next 10 years. It'd probably be less return. So you might be eating into your principal as you withdraw 4%.
I understand.
Okay?
Good point. Good point. Thank you for your help.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate
Thank
the call.
Thank you very much.
You know, it's very difficult looking in the crystal ball for the future, everybody. But I know, and I continue to say, I think interest rates are going to rise very, very slowly. And you're going to ask me 10 years from now, what will be the mortgage rate? I'll tell you it's not going to be near 4%. It might be near 6%, but not 4%. And I don't know what the ride will be along the way, but I'm pretty sure it'll be up. This is InvestTalk Personal, the day-to-day money decisions we make that have a lasting impact on your finances. Stuff the college admission offices won't tell you. If you have kids or grandkids going into college, everybody sweats over the SAT, right? Everybody sweats over the good SAT scores. But according to the National Association for College Admission Counseling, A learned at a high school may be worth a B at a regular, a more difficult high school. Colleges now give more weight to grades from college prep courses. More. So they look at, well, wait a minute, they don't just look at the grades anymore. They look at where you went. And many colleges rely on a student application essay to judge their worthiness, but what if the student really didn't write it themselves? It happens a lot. Now, many colleges are requiring additional pieces of writing graded by a teacher. And the SAT advantage, critics have long argued that the weight given SAT scores give an unfair advantage to wealthier students who can afford test preparation classes. Well, that's very true. And I don't know how you can get around that. There's no way. You need to, if you're going to send your kids and they're going to take the SAT, a test preparation class is pretty important these days. And many colleges are giving, they're looking for students that are going to pay the full price. They like, in freshman year, they're looking for foreign international students that they love that full price. And just because you've gotten an acceptance letters from a college doesn't mean you're necessarily going to get in it, because those acceptance letters are predicated on your score, is grades, because remember, you apply way in advance before you graduate from high school. They're going to be relying on your grades for that last year, and they look at these days social media postings when they want to see what your kid's doing, and they know that if they go to the social media posting, they type in your child's name and see what's out there on the internet. Be very careful. Talk to your kids. Don't put stuff on the internet that might jeopardize their ability to get in college. The colleges can rescind those acceptance letters. And that's InvestTalk Personal, everybody. Maybe you have something to add to the topic? You can get in touch with me at 888-99-CHART, or you can send me an email at contactsteve@investtalk.com.
This tool measures your capacity for risk. Try our free risk analyzer. It's available anytime you're ready on investtalk.com. Try it out. It just takes about 3 minutes, and it can see if you match up with your retirement portfolio.
888-992-4278. That's our number. Whenever you want to talk to me, give me a call. Let's talk to Mike in Apple Valley. How you doing, Mike? You want to talk about Boeing Airlines?
Yeah, I was wondering what you thought of the stock and the company, and what kind of price target you had on their value.
Boeing is there's only two worldwide airlines that are any size, and that's Boeing and Airbus. And Boeing is going to be around forever. There's nothing wrong with Boeing. Boeing, has been around for a long time. Their earnings are going to be up 42% this year, but only up 3% next year. Sales have been increasing 7%, 8%, and be pretty consistent. So why is the stock not doing well? And probably, Mike, recent last couple of months, probably has something to do with the dollar getting stronger. Remember, they're an international company. They're selling those planes not just here in the United States. They're selling all over the world. And the stronger our dollar is, the more difficult it is for those foreign buyers to buy our products, you know, buy the Boeing airplanes, which are very expensive from the get-go, right? But the company itself looks pretty solid. They're going to make $8.56 next year. It's a $123 stock. So that means it's a, you know, it's a pretty good price for the stock. I'm going to divide take $122 per share and divide that by $8.56, and we'll get next year's P.E. ratio is 14. This year's P.E. ratio is 19. I think that's a pretty good value. I do, Mike. I think it's for Boeing paying a 2.5% dividend. Their five-year average P.E. is 12 to 50. So based on next year's earnings per share, if that comes in, the P.E. is going to be 14. That tells me that it should go up in value. Now, here's the danger, Mike. If the economy falls, Boeing is a very cyclical stock. It follows our economy. And another reason why it's not done well this year is because Europe has done poor. They're in recession. But long term, you want to buy this when it's cheap. And I think it's cheap, about $118, $120, and it's at $122 now. I think the stock is probably worth closer to $150. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. That's Boeing. B-A is the symbol, everybody. B-A, Boeing. Okay. There was an article about taking Social Security benefits early and that why smart people take Social Security benefits early. That's an article that was put out there by Motley Fool earlier. And I'm going to take exception to that. I think it's not wise. If you read the article carefully, they did say that the people that should take benefits early, I'm talking about 62 instead of 66 or 70, the ones who should take it are the people who are in poor health and you don't expect to live very long. Okay. I'm okay with that. If you're in terrible health, take the benefits early. But for everybody else, you should try to wait till you're 70 years old, because in between 66 and 70, those 4 years, you make 8% more a year. And the longer you live, or more importantly, if you're a guy, the longer your wife lives, the more she will make. You kind of want to think about your spouse, because usually women live longer than men. And you really want to get the best you can for them. And that means you should probably wait. Wait. And if your spouse is much younger than you, okay, you're an older guy, you marry a younger woman, it makes even more sense to wait, because she's going to live a lot longer than you. You want to help her, don't you? She's your wife. You need to help in that situation. Now, there's other considerations. You can't just take what I say and go with it. How much money did you make? You take your top 35 years of earnings. How much money did your wife make? Yeah, there's different considerations, but as a general rule, be patient. Call us now at 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics, so please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time. This is InvestTalk, more free advice from the archives. How many millionaires do you know who have become wealthy by investing in savings accounts? I rest my case. Robert G. Allen. We're glad you invested this hour with us. Once again, here's portfolio manager Steve Peasley.
You know, no wealthy person puts their money in savings accounts. That's not how, they know that that's the worst thing you could do. Now, when you're young and you're just starting out, well, you maybe have to start, you know, with putting money in a savings account. But that's not where you're going to make wealth. Let's go to JC and Tracy, and wants to talk about Petrobrazil. How you doing, JC?
Hey, Hey, Steve, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Hey, I have a question about this particular oil stock, and I'm wondering what you think about getting into the stock, or should I wait? I know it's reporting earnings tomorrow, I think, and it's having a really hard time.
Yeah, all the oil companies, all the majors, and Petrobrazil is one of the major companies. It's a $78 billion company, $79 billion, so it's big. All of them are having trouble, and it's pretty easy to understand why. That's because oil prices have been coming down. They're down like in an $80 area now, you know, and not that many. Just a month or two ago, it was $90, $90. Not that long ago, it was over $100. Well, where the fall in oil prices is what's causing these big major oil companies to start to fall in their prices. And Petrobrazil have gone down. You know, it was a high a little over 20. Today's at 12, and that was 2 months ago. So you're asking.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you're asking the right question, JC. At what point does this become a bargain, and do I get into it? Which I think is the right question. But then you should go step back a little bit and say, well, where do I think oil prices are going to go? Is oil prices, are they as low as they're going to get? Now, in my office, we just had this discussion today. In my office, we argued this, and I said, I think this is about where they're going to stabilize, right around $80, $81, $82. Justin thinks it's going to be more in the 70 area, $75 area. So, now, if he's right, these guys are going to go down further. If I'm right, this is kind of where they're going to stop going down. So I kind of like Petrobrazil. Okay. Long term, Petrobrazil is fine. I like other major oil companies better than Petrobrazil. And I'll tell everybody right now, I'm going to come up with a list, a watch list for all the major oil companies I think you should be considering. There'll be about four or five of them on that list.
Valero is going up for the last few days, and just Petrobrazil is heading down like the rock. So what is the difference from one to another?
Another very good question. Why would Valero go up while the major oil company go down? Well, what does Valero do? What's the symbol on Valero?
VLO.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, that's right. Thank you. What do they do? They're engaged in refining and marketing oil. Think about that. They don't explore for it. They don't pump, get it out of the ground. They don't get the oil. They buy the oil from somebody else, and then they refine it. Why would they go up? Why would they go up when oil prices go down? Because the oil prices are going down, their cost of material is cheaper, right?
Cheaper, okay.
Because they're buying oil.
Yeah, you're right.
So when you look at a refinery, any refinery will probably do better with cheaper oil. They will probably do better than the integrated companies. Now, the integrated companies.
Steve. So if Monday is the last day for I'm changing subject right now.
QE, quantitative easing.
Why is the stock market went very, tremendous volume today, and we're expecting to go down because the QE is it'll stop on Monday week.
Well, you got to remember, everybody knows that QE will be stopping, right? You've known it, I've known it, we all known it. And the stock market started to fall back in September, right? So now, remember, the investors look forward. Everybody's trying to beat everybody else out. So they all know that QE was stopping. And so now that they beat the market up by falling 10%, now they're saying, okay, well, what's the next? Well, next, what is the interest rates going to do? What are they going to do with interest rates? So they're already looking forward. That's why you can't really, it doesn't connect the day that it stops. That means the market reacts to that day. It always reacts forward. Thanks for the call, JC. I appreciate it. Before we close for this hour, our wealth webinar is coming up on November 12th from 6:30 to 7:30 at night Pacific time. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to webinars. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. On behalf of everybody at KPP Financial, including Justin Klein, we're happy to join us and hope to see you tomorrow on Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely